The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, in Zen, sometimes we say that sitting still is one side of our practice, and then tending the garden is the other side. And that balances out the practice. Two sides, stillness, oneness, in which you really lose the sense of separation, a division. The duality of things can dissolve as you're sitting. And some of you may I've been experiencing that this morning, so there's a good feeling of being connected with each other, connected with the ground beneath us and the sky above. And then when we stand up, there's this engagement, a relationship. Suddenly you discover, oh, you have a relationship with the ground beneath and with each other in the room, and there isn't even so much room to move. So you discover that there's some limitation that you carry as you inhabit a particular form. So this has been an area of investigation for people for many, many centuries. So I will talk a little bit about the fire at Tassajara. I want to talk about it as something both unusual, extraordinary, and also as something very ordinary. One of the Zen ancestors in China, Zhaozhou, as a young man was going around and investigating things and talking to various teachers, and he came to Nanchuan and he asked Nanchuan, "What is the Tao? Or what is the way?" And Tao has had a long history already in China of being a word that had a connotation of the totality of things. Everything in a, say, dynamic interplay, a balancing of forces and opposites. What is the Tao? And at that time, Nanchuan said, ordinary mind is the Tao. Ordinary mind is the way. And so Zhaozhou considered that, and then he asked, so how should I come into some orientation? How can I orient myself towards the Tao, the ordinary mind? And Nanchuan says, you try to do that and you miss it. Even the slightest intention will separate you. Right? And so then Zhaozhou said, well, if I can't do that, if I can't even turn towards it, then how do I know? How do I know what it is, and how do I know that I'm in some relation with it? And Nanchuan says, it's not a matter of knowing. It's not a matter of not knowing. Knowing tends towards dualities, and not knowing tends toward a kind of dullness. And so, at that, Zhaozhou said, oh. He had some sense of what Nanchuan was talking about. And then he went off and became ordained as a Buddhist monk, and then returned to study with Nanchuan for a while, which turned out to be about 30 years, clarifying and deepening his appreciation of this knowing and not knowing. So this past summer, there was a lightning storm on the summer solstice. Thunder and lightning struck in many places in California, and this time struck around in the Los Padres National Forest, around where we have Tassajara Zen Mountain Center. And from that, numerous fires were started. I'm wondering here, how many of you have been to Tassajara? Could you raise your hand? Ah, looks like a good representation, about half the people here. So you know that if you've been to Tassajara, you know it's very rugged mountains and mixed vegetation with chaparral and some areas of oaks and some areas of pines. At that time, the Forest Service did an evaluation of where these fires were and the potential say destructiveness of the fire or the constructiveness of the fire. And determined that it was dangerous for people to be in the whole area, actually, of Los Padres National Forest. And so they talked to the county sheriff in Monterey, and the sheriff issued an evacuation order. And at that time, we closed the summer guest season at Tassajara. And so for those of you who know, Tassajara Zen Mountain Center is closed for retreat from the end of September through March into April. So about half the year we have people there now. My co-abbot Paul Haller is leading the winter Ango practice period, 90-day retreat. But then in the summer we're open for guests, and we have short workshops and retreats, usually for a few days. And people are invited to come as paying guests, and that's a major source of income and support for the rest of the year at Tassajara. And so we asked all the guests immediately to evacuate, and then we had to decide about different students who should stay, and we began to pare down the staff there. So there were a lot of decisions being made, and at that time it looked like, well, the fire could come into Tassajara any time in about 3 days. And I was not there at the time. But as time passed, it became a little clearer that it might be useful for one of the abbots to go down and join the people at Tassajara. And so when I did go down, I joined the crew. Every day we did a fire drill. We were working hard to prepare Tassajara for fire. We put up sprinkler systems on all the roofs. Worked with the fact that we do have water supply there. There's a creek that flows through, and the creek was running well. And so we were able to set up systems so that we could pump water out of the creek and wet down the buildings. And we have a standpipe system, and we have some fire hoses. And we had a consultant, a fire captain from Cal Fire, who was there giving us guidance and instruction, teaching us how to work with fire. During that time, also, there became some interest that seemed to arise, the interest from the various media And so some people would come in for an hour or two. They'd make the drive over the road. It's just 14 miles of mountain, rugged, rocky road. Come in for a short time and do an interview or something. And one of those interviews I remember saying to, I think it was NBC, somebody from NBC, I was saying, they were asking about fighting the fire, and I said, well, we're not actually so much interested in fighting the fire. But we're preparing to meet it. And I don't remember exactly what I said, but I think something like, I regard the fire as meeting a friend. You know? That the fire is not exactly separate from me. There's fire also inside me. And that, but sometimes when you meet a friend, you need to be pretty strict. I'm not sure that part got into the... into what was sent around the world. And as it turns out, at the same time we had a couple of our members from San Francisco Zen Center who were in Mongolia for an international Buddhist women's gathering, assembly, and they, some of you may know Susan O'Connell and Maya Wender, and they were just outside, what is it, the capital of Mongolia, Ulaanbaatar, and they were in a hotel, and they were looking at, trying to find some news. And lo and behold, there I was. And it turned out that it was Al Jazeera. But Al Jazeera was presenting this. Buddhist monks in America fighting fire. You know? And so it was clear that there was this this interest internationally. And then in the San Francisco Chronicle, someone later showed me a cartoon that came from Tom Meyer. Some of you may have seen it. I know you can't see it from back there, but I thought this is it's quite wonderful the way that Tom Meyer picked this up. So I wanted to go through the cartoon. So the cartoon has this little monk, little, you know, like this big, in relation to a big flame. And the little monk is bowing to the big flames, and it says, Namaste. Namaste. And then the big flame says, what? And then the little monk says, I'm sensing anger. And the big flame says, I'm a fire. So I'm going to come back to that part because my feeling was a little different than that. But anyway, the monk then proceeds to say, this fire, is that what you believe about yourself? Or is it what others want you to believe about you? And the big flame says, this is California, isn't it? And then the little monk gives a little talk about balancing. He says, you need to bring your fire energy into balance with the other three elements. When were you born? And the flame says, late June. And the little monk says, oh, a Cancer. Well, there you go. You're a water sign. And goes on to say he needs to bring up more of to awareness to as water energy, right? So, and the big flame says, "Well, I have been feeling a little jittery lately. What should I do?" And the little monk says, "Have some chamomile tea. And then you should come and soak in our hot tub." So we do have hot springs at Tassajara, which are natural hot springs. So that's that dialogue. And then the concluding frame here shows a bunch of firefighters all in their outfits arriving, and the fire's all out. Right? There's some blackened stubs around. And the firefighter says, "So you're telling us you talked the fire to death?" And then another firefighter says, "Maybe there's something to this talking with the enemy thing." And then a little baby who appears in the scene says, "When I grow up, I want to be a fire monk." So that's kind of a new one, you know, and when you ask grade school kids what they want to be when they grow up, they maybe say fireman, firewoman, fire person, but fire monk. I think that's maybe a new one. And the other day someone told me at Zen Center that they don't think of me as Abbot Steve, they think of me as fire monk. So this part about the monk saying, "I'm sensing anger," it's interesting that there's a tendency to attribute human intention to fire. Right? And even when we were down to five people doing night patrols, actually after the fire came through, I'll talk about that just a little bit, but after the fire came through, and then the next night we were doing patrols, and as you walked in the dark, you would see glowing embers all around. And one of the people in our group said, "It feels like the fire is just lurking." And then we had a whole discussion about intentionality and fire. And how to see fire as fire, not as something that has some, say, threatening intention. And even at the point when the fire was, so we were talking about the fire as being 3 days away, if you're not careful, you begin to think, "Oh, the fire intends to come this way." That the fire has some directionality that's related to us, right? Which just really reveals our own self-centeredness. I want to read something which might seem obscure. My wife thinks it is, anyway. And this is something I wrote afterwards based upon Dogen Zenji's, Zen Master Dogen, who was a 13th century Zen teacher who took the Soto Zen lineage that I'm a part of from China to Japan. And he wrote, one of his teachings was called the Mountains and Rivers Sutra, which is really the teaching, the Dharma teaching of mountains and rivers themselves. And in this case, I took a section of it which was having to do with water, and I rewrote it for fire, a little fire and wind. So this is with apologies to Zen Master Dogen, offering a perspective on fire. "Fire is neither strong nor weak, not hot nor cool, neither moving nor still, neither existent nor non-existent, neither deluded nor enlightened. When fire intensifies, it melts rocks. Who can endure it? When it gently warms, it is like a mother's breast. Who can live without it? Reflect on the moment when you see the fire of the Ten Directions as the fire of the Ten Directions. Ten Directions is the four cardinal points, north, south, east, west, and those halfway in between, plus zenith and nadir. So Ten Directions is all of space, right? So reflect on the moment when you see the fire of the Ten Directions as the fire of the Ten Directions. This is not just studying fire as humans and devas or gods see fire. This is studying the moment when fire sees fire. Because fire has practiced realization of fire, fire speaks fire. To understand completely, you should be hot and be cold, and leap beyond hot and cold. Go beyond the vital path where fire fathoms fire. All beings do not view fire in the same way. Some drink fire and quench their thirst. Others consume it as a fine banquet. Fire beetles regard burning branches as a conjugal bed. Some beings see fire as spiritual treasure or a wish-granting jewel. Some see it as a barrier, others as sanctuary. Some see it as the Dharma nature of pure liberation, the true human body as fire energy, or as the essence of mind. Human beings see fire as fire. Thus the views of all beings are not the same. Please inquire deeply into this matter now. Are there many ways to see one elemental thing? Or is it a mistake to view many different beings as one elemental kind of thing? You should pursue this beyond the limit of pursuit. Accordingly, endeavors in practice realization of the way, the Tao, are not limited to one or two kinds. The ultimate realm has 1,000 kinds and 10,000 ways. When considering the meaning of this, it seems that there is fire for various beings, but there is no original fire. There is no fire common to all types of beings, no essence of fire. Yet fire for these various kinds of beings does not depend on mind or body, does not arise from actions, does not depend on self or other. Fire's nature is completely beyond fire. Fire's freedom depends only on fire. So I'll stop at that point. So fire speaks fire, and fire's liberation depends completely on fire. Just as you must speak as a human being, and your liberation depends upon you being completely true to your being a human being. So when we were preparing for this fire coming into Tassajara, my feeling was that I know fire and I don't know fire. On one side, I'm used to having a little stove in the abbot's cabin at Tassajara and having some fire that's contained, and it gives warmth in the cold times of the year at Tassajara. And yet when fire is burning on the mountains, it's something that I don't really know. I don't have that kind of control. And yet there's ways in which we can work with it. And so at Tassajara, during the time that the fire was nearby but not right at Tassajara, we were making these various preparations, realizing the potentiality of fire and realizing our own human nature as vulnerable, and realizing that we had taken a lot of time and built these various structures for us to live in and practice in, and that it would be a great loss to us if we lost the zendo and the kitchen and the cabins and the bathhouse and So part of this practice of tending the garden, as I mentioned at the beginning, for us was simply taking care of the situation, moment by moment and day by day. And with the fire being a real potentiality, we thought, okay, we need to take care and prepare. And so we did that. As it turned out, the fire, the three-day-away fire, was kind of pokey. Not so interested in rushing into Tassajara. It was burning off and up farther up in the watershed and back over on the other side, Willow Creek. But every day we would make a practice of monitoring the fire. Where is the fire today? Where's the fire this morning? Where's the fire this evening? Where's the fire in the middle of the night? So we had patrols going 24 hours a day. And the fire still seemed to be 3 days away. A week later, 3 days away. So we called it the three-day-away fire. And the meanwhile, we were preparing mentally, and I was coaching people on the fire crew not to run. When the fire comes in, you may have to take a fire hose, water hose, right, and set it up. But don't run. Don't get into a panic state of mind. You can walk quickly. You know. You can be brisk and energetic. But notice your state of mind so that you're just paying attention to what you're doing. So this was part of our discipline, actually, in the preparing for the fire. I was also studying the past logs. We had fire in 1977, a major fire that came into Tassajara and burned all around Tassajara. And at that time, we had a lot of help from the Forest Service and CAL FIRE crews. This time, however, we received word from the Forest Service that their policies had changed and they were not going to send in help to fight the fire. They really wanted us all to leave. They felt that the risk was too great to be there when fire came in, and they didn't want to risk having their own crews in there, and they didn't want to risk being cut off because it's a 14-mile rugged road and then the fire could be burning across the road. So those of you who know, we had a meeting in Jamesburg. We were invited to come out and meet with the deputy superintendent of the Forest Service in Jamesburg. And I invited him to come in. And he didn't want to come in over the road. Another person at the meeting, George Haynes, was the Monterey unit chief for CAL FIRE. Separate agency, state agency and federal agency. So there's this kind of interplay that I was also learning about with the various agencies. And this, he did come in the next day after we met in Jamesburg. And looked around and saw the preparations that we had made, and he said, this all looks good. You're really doing a lot to protect the place, and it looks like it's defensible. And so I'm going to try to get one of our crews to come in and help you. While he was working on that, in the next couple of days, the fire came in. There are more details. I'm looking at the time here. I realize, okay, I don't want to... I want to leave a little more time for questions, but just to say that we had one of the CAL FIRE captains, who was a friend of Tassajara, Stuart Carlson, and he was there giving us a lot of suggestions and helping us train, checking out our equipment, helping us identify where to have fire, perimeter fire breaks, And we had decided that we would all be able to stay. We were down to 20 people, and we were able to stay during the fire coming in, and we'd do what we could to take care of Tassajara. But then there came a point when another evacuation order came in, which said that there were changed conditions, and the wind was picking up, and it was looking like it was going to be drier, more intense. And Stuart felt that he couldn't be responsible for us staying at Tassajara, so he advised us all to leave. And so during the course of that, we had a kind of an impromptu staff meeting on the road going out, and five of us decided that we didn't feel that we were risking our lives. We knew what the situation was, and that we could stay and help Tassajara. And if we did not stay and help Tassajara, the likelihood of everything burning was great. The reason being that we'd set up all these systems to wet things down with sprinkler systems, which were dependent on pumps that would only run, they only had fuel for a couple of hours, and if after a couple of hours the pumps would stop running, and then we called it Dharma rain, that we had set up to water the tops of the rooftops of the main buildings. Dharma rain would dry up, and then who knows when the fire would come in. We had no idea at that point whether it would be the next day or two or three days later, but the Forest Service had made it very clear that if we did evacuate, we would not be allowed to come back in until they were comfortable that there was no more threat of fire, which would mean it would be after the fire had moved through. So we did make that decision under a lot of pressure. I mean, it was literally, they were saying, okay, we have helicopters dropping water on the road ahead to keep it open, so you have to go out right now or you won't be able to get out. So there was no time to, say consider things and with a lot of, the way we often like to do, to take our time making decisions. And then, as it turned out, we had patrols that, so there were five of us, and we stayed in Tassajara. Our first priority was to keep the pumps fueled and in running and to keep the water on, and we ran the sprinklers all night long that night. And we were on patrols through the night, and different ones of us would go up and see where the fire was. And it turned out that night the fire did really move. And by the next morning, it was clearly on the move. And so this was in July the 10th. So it had actually been several weeks, almost 3 weeks, from the time the lightning hit and the fire actually came into Tassajara. And then it surprised us because when it came in simultaneously on all sides. Those of you who know, I was driving up the road some of you know where Lime Point is. At dawn, the fire was at Lime Point and farther up the watershed from there. And then several hours later, when I came back up, actually just before noon, the fire was right down at the head of the Church Creek Trail and moving fast. So at that point, we decided, okay, it's time to go to work. And then the fire came into Tassajara right after noon, and we didn't have any time to have any lunch or anything because we were getting ourselves prepared. And then we had a very intense, about 5-6 hours with five people moving around to defend the perimeter as much as we could of Tassajara. We had walkie-talkies so that we could be in touch with each other at different points and then get support where we needed more than one person at different points. And we did have our water systems running, and we had fire hoses at different places, and we were able to stop the fire at our perimeter lines for the most part. And when it would cross over, then we would focus on putting it out. And sometimes it felt like it was raining rocks and burning embers from coming down the sides of the mountains. So we were watching out all the time for rocks coming down. And then when burning embers would come down, then we would... And some burning embers were huge logs, you know. They were sometimes whole trees. And the the losses at Tassajara then were minimal. As it turned out, the fire came almost to the baths. It actually burned part of the fence at the women's side of the baths, and we were able to stop it there. And then on the coming downhill by the entry gate, started burning the fence at the entry gate, and there was fire up on the roof over the empty gate, but we were able to put that out. And then it came down by the swimming pool, and I think it was Graham who went down. He was checking the pump down below the pool. We were pumping water out of the pool into our system, and then he noticed that the bathroom by the pool was on fire, and so then we were able to stop it from spreading to other buildings, but we did lose that one. We lost the one cabin up on the hill called the Birdhouse, and we lost part of several firewood sheds that were more outlying small buildings. The next day, we were taking a little break, and I remember we had a meeting and we're kind of assessing where we were at, and I said, okay, well, looks like I can go take a nap. So I was headed over to the Abbot's cabin, and I heard this crackling sound. What's that? And then about then I heard this horn sounding, the fire horn alarm, and then it turned out that the fire had sprung up right across the side of the driveway, right across from where all the propane tanks and everything are. And we figured out later that what had happened is it had been burning kind of underground in a big, sometimes it'll follow a root of a dead tree or something, and it had burned underground and under some big boulders, I mean, big boulders like this. And then later, a whole day later, 24 hours later, it caught fire of this firewood shed, which really blazed up, and we weren't really ready for that because we had shut down all of our systems. So it took us a little while, and that if you go into Tassajara, those of you who come next summer or whatever, you take a look there. The juniper trees are burned right there, and that was a place where the fire was very close, and it really caught us by surprise after we kind of thought it was over. So then we reaffirmed our need to continue patrols, which we watched some embers burning in various places for several days, even a couple of weeks after that. There were places that big trees were still smoldering and were no longer a danger because, you know, all the fuel around them had burned. So in talking with some, you know, fire professionals, they thought, wow, you really did good. And I realized that we had no idea what was good. We had no idea what was a good fire or a bad fire. We, in our sense of openness, we didn't take a professional point of view. I think a professional firefighter would have some sense of wanting to really manage the fire and control the fire in certain ways and whatever. And we were just moment by moment watching how we could meet it. I do feel that this is a recognition of the environment. You could say it's a fire ecology. The whole chaparral forest in California is, you could say it's conditioned to, or it's evolutionarily selected to survive fire over thousands of years. This has been happening, maybe millions of years. And so we're relative newcomers, and I feel that we should respect the environment that we're in and continue to learn how to take care of ourselves in relation to it. And this time we were fortunate because we had some time between the lightning strike and in the future we won't necessarily have that. It may be 20 years from now, it could be 5 years from now, it could be 50 years from now, you never know. So somehow we have to build this into our culture of how to meet fire. Now I know I want to just express my sympathy for people who more recently, just in the last week, had big fires in Santa Barbara and farther south in California. I personally know one of my friends in the Dharma, Isanga, whose sister lost everything in Santa Barbara. They had 8 minutes to get out, and when they came back, their house was completely gone. I know there are many other people who have suffered losses like that. So at Tassajara, we were relatively fortunate. But it was clear to me that if we hadn't been there, it's likely that all the buildings at Tassajara would have burned, just by what I know from the way the fire came in. So I feel very fortunate to have been able to be there. And then a few weeks later, we were able to reorganize and clean up and reopen our summer guest season. And we have been fortunate. Many people were very supportive, and we have received significant contributions to offset the losses. We don't know when we will rebuild the cabin that's lost, and probably we'll rebuild the bath down by the pool in April. I'll hope to get it ready for the next summer season. So it's 10 minutes to 11. Maybe just a question or two about anything that I've left you with some question about, and then we can stop. And if anyone's interested, to stick around a little for a few more minutes after that, if you want to regroup, I'd be happy to answer some other questions. I can see people need to leave. So maybe we should just... There's a question way in the back. Someone raised the hand.
How afraid did you feel fighting the fire, and how did you handle your own fear?
That was one of the points on my outline. I thought I should say something about fear. That was a big question, and it was a question for people in the decision about who should stay. And there were we tried to be realistic that some people felt that their own fear was too intense, and it would be good for them to practice with that somewhere else. At another time. But for the people who stayed, we basically took our own, say, anxiety level or our own fear into account. And so it's, and some people, fear is very interesting in this, in Dharma practice, fear. I mean, it's basically a very fundamental question of fear versus, say, love, loving kindness. So are you closed in some way to protect yourself, or are you open? And that varies from moment to moment. And different situations can, for different people, have different kind of intensity. And it's a very important study to notice how you yourself contribute to the feelings that come up. How much is the situation, and how much is your own, say, anticipation of what could happen. So... the people, as it turned out, the people who ended up staying were people who were experienced practitioners, who had many years of training in sitting with fear and other emotions, sitting with anger, sitting with various things that come up, and were, it's not that people were not afraid, but that people were able to acknowledge fear in this and to begin to see how the fear is a construction of a divided mind. And of course, we have to have fear. Our survival depends on it, right? But is the fear in balance with what is, say, an accurate seeing of what is? Or is the fear distorted by your own past karma? So we had reviewed, say, the worst case scenario. If the fire was burning everything in Tassajara, where could we go? And we have a stone wall room where we could retreat to. We had oxygen there in case everything was filled with smoke. Smoke was definitely an issue all the way through this. And of course, your feelings, the emotions that come up may also relate to your own body. You know, if you have, say, some allergy or you have asthma or something like that, then your fear intensifies because even a more, say, slightly smoky condition may activate your inability to breathe. So it's important to take that into account. And then for people, then we did a visualization exercise of being, say, in this shelter with fire all around for an hour or two, something like that. And the thought would be that would probably be the maximum. And who would feel that they could, and visualizing that, could stand it without climbing the walls, you know, and or having a kind of a breakdown and being utterly dependent on other people to hold them and console them, right? So when we did that, we had several people who felt they didn't want to be in that situation. And so it was important to be able to acknowledge that. So we had some people who decided this was not good for them to be there. So we worked with that in anticipation of what could happen, and that was helpful. And then when the fire actually came, the first principle all the time was to take good care of yourself. Don't put yourself in a situation of risk. So we knew where the boundaries were, and we kept checking. And there was only one time when I felt fearful myself for someone else, where they were up on the hill, putting water on one part of the fire, and it was coming around, and I was considering that they might be cut off, so I was calling to them to come back to, and then had another person putting water on this section of the fire in it, and it turned out that they had another avenue of escape that I wasn't aware of, and they were safer than I thought they were, but that was a point where I was afraid for them. So that's something about, you know, how we're working with fear. Thanks for that question. Yeah.
I have a sort of non-Buddhist comment to make about this. About 7 years ago, I was writing a book about firefighters, and I put myself through a fire academy. Uh-huh. And it was terrifying, fighting the live fire in a training building and all that gear, and you can't hear and you can't see. I presume you didn't even have any personal protective gear?
Scuba, no, we had gear. Anything? We had gear. We all had helmets.
You did?
There's
okay.
A photograph on the door as I saw as I came in, and for five of us there, and we all had helmets and some okay. Gear. We even had the protective worst-case scenario shelter, basically the little kind of baked potato foil.
Right, thing that right, you can put over, right. Yeah, yeah.
You can put over yourself, you know. Right. But anyway,
it strikes me that the way firefighters, who also feel fearful about these low frequency, high risk kinds of things, that what helps them feel safer is consistent practice and reliable teamwork.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know if anybody had invited you to put some fire team through a fire academy, but that's a possibility that's open to you.
Well, that's good. Yeah, in a sense, we had maybe our own abbreviated version of that by having the fire captain, Stuart Carlson, come and give us trainings, and we we were having drills and working with equipment and so forth. So I think we do need to do more in the future. It would be good to do more and have a fire crew there, because it's clear now that we can't depend on the Forest Service or the... And I know they were really spread thin. There were so many fires all over, you know, that they were having to deal with places that they couldn't really justify putting energy into Tassajara when, you know, Big Sur was threatened and all, a lot of other places were threatened. So, but thank you for that, yeah. It's 11 o'clock, so let's stop here. And really, I thank you for your kind attention, and for those who want to make a contribution to San Francisco Zen Center I want to thank you for that. Then if anyone else who wants to come and talk to me, I'll just stay here for a few more minutes, okay? Thank you very much.